Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
The Jews control Wall Street.
This is healthy.
No revolution.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent.
Bourgeoisie won't go without violent means.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
Wall Street Jews.
We understand their frustration.
No, my friend.
We applaud their activism.
No revolution.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
These are the Jews. The Jews control Wall Street.
It's young. It's spontaneous. It's focused. And it's going to be effective.
No socialism.
Yeah.
Well, I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. The Democrats have now sided with the street communists. And strangely enough, or shall I say not so strangely enough, Iran's Hitler, Ahmadinejad, agrees with Nancy Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the other demon cats who are lauding the communists in the gutter. Now, I want to talk about the gangsters in the Democrat Party, because you may think that it's a party of the people. You may think they care about alternative energy. You may think that they care about pollution. You may think all of those things because you're one of the useful idiots that has permitted this scoundrel to invade the White House and his minions to sack the Treasury. The fact of the matter is, we learned today that the funder of Solyndra, Mr. Kaiser, a billionaire, paid zero taxes for years. Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, who I told you months ago was playing a pretty good act of Mr. Aw Shucks, middle of the road, middle American, let's pay more taxes, came out today. He may owe $1 billion in back taxes himself. That's Obama's favorite billionaire. He's the house billionaire. He's the house billionaire. He's the plantation billionaire, Buffett. That's why he said we should pay more taxes, because he pays so little. And the fact of the matter is, there's more to this than meets the eye. Now, I want to ask you a question on the Savage Nation. The scandals in the administration are so great, and they grow at such an exponential rate every day. I may be exhausting you with them, and I want to ask you this. Do you want me to talk about the scandals of Obama? Do you want me to read from my novel? Do you want me to do something lighter? Because I realize you can only take so much. I have never seen anything like this. One day after another, one scandal after another, he's overwhelming America. Here you have people on Wall Street saying they're Hitler's bankers on Wall Street. I have the picture. Blame the Jews. That's the message of some Wall Street protesters. I warned you behind it all was anti-Semitism. And strangely enough, or shall I say not so strangely enough, not so strangely enough, take a guess who is behind the Wall Street protests. Take a guess. That's right. One name keeps coming up, George Soros, one of the world's most wealthiest Americans. He's 81 years old. He has a fortune of $22 billion. But what does he have to do with the Wall Street protests? Well, let's go back a bit. The Hungarian American Soros was an early supporter of the campaign of Barack Obama. Remember, he hated Bush so much because Bush wanted to tax him. Now he has done very well indeed. His wealth has soared under Obama. But do you know that Reuters found an indirect financial link between old Soros and a group called Adbusters, an anti-capitalist group in Canada, which started the Wall Street protests with a marketing campaign aimed at sparking an Arab Spring-type uprising in America. Moreover, Soros and the so-called protesters share some ideological ground. What does he mean by that? What does Soros mean when he says, I can understand their sentiment? Why would you think one of the wealthiest hedge fund operators in the world, a man who almost broke the Bank of England, a man who almost broke the Malaysian currency, a man who gives hundreds of millions of dollars to the most socialist communist causes in the world, why would he do that? Can you figure this out? Why would he back a socialist group from Canada which wants to occupy Wall Street, copying the Arab Spring protests, which have brought Sharia law, the Muslim Brotherhood to the forefront, Christian churches burning, Christians being killed. And incidentally, on that note, your friend Obama had something to say about the Egyptian situation. Christian churches are being burned. Christians are being killed. Obama said that we should see restraint by the Egyptians, by the Christians in Egypt. That's right. Our first Muslim president has shown who he really is over and over and over again. I want to talk about this, but I don't know whether you want me to talk about it. I think you may find it to be too much. Maybe it's too extreme. Sometimes the truth is too extreme. I recognize that. But I will remind you of something that Barry Goldwater stated, which, by the way, I dedicated my book, Abuse of Power, with this phrase. The phrase is something I've never forgotten from the day I first heard it, which is, I've got to find it because I don't want to mangle it. I kind of know what it is. I just don't want to miss one single syllable. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. Barry Goldwater, 1964. Play Barry Goldwater.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Now, the election was stolen from him by the gangsters in the Republican Party, as you well know, or else we would have had an amazing presidency. But instead, it's history. He was forgotten, you know, by now. But the fact is, am I too extreme? I mean, do you want me to stop talking about this? I can do that. Maybe you don't want to know why Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Maybe you don't want to know how the funder of the solar company that's being investigated by the FBI paid zero taxes for years, even though he's a billionaire. Maybe you don't want to know that the solar energy lobby is still calling for extending Obama's stimulus grants for solar power because they stand to make billions of dollars. Maybe you don't want to know who's behind the Wall Street protests and all roads lead to George Soros. Maybe you don't want to know that Obama called for restraint by the Egyptian Christians, even though it's Christians who are being murdered by Muslims. Maybe you don't want to know any of that. Or would you rather that I read sex scenes from Abuse of Power? Now, the reason I say that is simple. I thought about that in bed last night, strangely enough. And I realized when I was a young kid, I would, you know, watch a lot of TV, go to movies, average American kid. And I read novels. I read Pulp Fiction. I remember that I would hear about books in high school. And the first thing the other boys would whisper to me about in the halls were the sex scenes. They would say, oh, you got to go to page 52 and read that. And naturally, being an American boy, I'd go to page 52 and read that. If the sex scene was good, I would buy the book or I'd borrow it and read it. Has anything really changed in this country? Why should we hide a sex scene from Abuse of Power? Why? Because I'm a conservative? You mean conservatives are made of wood? You mean conservatives are made of stone? There's not one F word in the whole book. I am not a rapper. I am not a literate moron with gold teeth and a chain hanging down to my crotch. I can write a sex scene without reverting to the gutter, and I did so in Abuse of Power. So I can do it. I can do it all. I mean, I'm a virtuoso here, and I'm going to talk about some of this today. And I'm also going to talk about Obama being the Putin of America. Why do I say Obama is the Putin of America? That's an interesting question. Well, today we found out that the original seed money for the communists who are occupying Wall Street were from the original seed money was from George Soros. Some who consider him the most evil man on earth, a man with the designs to run the entire world, a man with more power than most sovereign nations, a man with more wealth than most sovereign nations, a man for whom no amount of money or power will ever be enough. He is a total and absolute sociopath. He is Dr. Evil incarnate. Now, most people don't understand why billionaires like George Soros are socialists, or worse yet, why they call for worldwide government, a single government for the world. Most people cannot understand how the very rich would want this. What you don't realize is that the oligarchs of Russia originated this way. Let's not forget this. Soros funds liberal causes or socialist or radical causes such as Occupy Wall Street, while he made more money than anybody else on Wall Street under Obama, so far as I know. He funded the street rabble on Wall Street and across America specifically to make certain that they continue to deflect attention away from him and from his cronies and throw the attention and the spotlight upon others to try to bring them down to keep the street rats off his own back. In the ex-Soviet Union, when Yeltsin was in power and they were moving towards a semi-market economy, almost all the assets of the Soviet Union or the state or the nation were given away to oligarchs. Some were math professors who later became zillionaires. They received the gold interests, the oil interests, the aluminum interests. Whatever heavy industries the Soviet state had been running were given to these oligarchs. And there was an understanding that the new oligarchs of Russia could make all the money they wanted to, so long as they kicked back a portion of it to the leadership of Russia, the ruling elite, and they did not get into politics. Do you remember what happened to Russian oil magnate Mikhail Khodorkovsky when he became a critic of Putin? Khodorkovsky was a math professor who became an oligarch billionaire, and he was doing fine. And then he made a mistake. He started to criticize Putin. He started to say he wanted to run for the leadership of Russia. He was then jailed by Putin and is still in prison because he violated the agreement. The agreement was make all the money you want, kick back as much as we demand, but stay out of politics. He did the first two, but he didn't do the third. He is still in prison, so far as I know. It is the same in America under Obama. Obama is the American equivalent of Putin without the integrity of nationalism, without the machismo of Putin, but with the same mentality of Putin. We have a new United Soviet States of America. It is positively frightening to watch. I'll be right back. Getting away with virtual robbery, not highway robbery. You know, if you give guns to a criminal and the criminal uses the gun in a crime, you go to jail. But what if the Justice Department gave 2,000 guns to Mexican criminals and they were used in crimes killing God knows how many in Mexico and at least one American Border Patrol agent? No one's guilty? How is that possible? Answer, the government is above the law. Now, it's not supposed to be that way. You understand that. You do understand that no one should be above the law in a democracy, but when you descend to a banana republic, which we have rapidly descended into under this administration, the government is above the law. So that's why I'm not going to talk about it. You understand that? Instead, I'm going to read a sex scene from Abuse of Power, and I'm going to leave out some of the lines. I'm going to airbrush some of the lines, which you'll have to read yourself in the book. Not that there's no F words. I just know it's a family show. But if you're ashamed of your body and if you're ashamed of lovemaking, then, turn the show off for a minute or two. Because I want to show you something that this is not a wooden book. This is literature. Okay? Exhausted as he was, Jack couldn't sleep. It was nice to be on a mattress again and have the warmth of a working radiator. But he spent the next 2 hours unable to stop thinking. And he starts thinking about what happened to him and, you know, how he just escaped something terrible. And he looked at his watch again because, remember, he has a mild case of Asperger's and he looks at clocks and watches to calm him down. That watch had brought him comfort so many times over the years, a sense of calm. There was nothing that could ever replace it, and he cursed blank for using him, for knowing instinctively that Jack would never leave something so valuable behind and using that knowledge against them, against all of them. Jack remembered the violence and death that had descended on that apartment house, and he remembers who died, right? Finally, Jack says to himself, stop it. You're going to save lives. It was a tragic corruption of his comment about preferring the death of 100 million Muslims to 100 million non-Muslims. The lives of dozens of people had to be surrendered in the hope of sparing millions more. That was the math of modern-day anti-terror activities. It was only a waste if he failed. That kept returning him to the biggest thought of all, and that was what was going to happen. He was starting to drift off when he heard the faint sound of a toilet down the hall. A moment later, a silhouette appeared in the bedroom doorway, barely visible in the light from the window. You left me alone, she said softly. You looked peaceful. I didn't want to disturb you. Well, probably happy to be rid of me for a while. Never, he told her. She came into the room. I said some terrible things to you last night. Sometimes I speak without thinking. You've already apologized for that, even though you didn't need to. You had a right to be upset. We both did. Nobody should ever have to see what we saw. She closed the door behind her now, then moved to a small television in the corner and turned it on, turning it to an Arab station, which was playing only Arabic music at the moment. Jack wasn't sure what she was up to, but he didn't protest when she came over to the bed and lit the scented candle that was sitting on the nightstand. Her long brown hair was highlighted against the window, and he saw a light snow falling outside. He didn't know if he should trust this or her motives. It didn't matter. He instantly felt himself stirring. I don't want to be alone right now, she said, then reached a hand under the back of her T-shirt and unfastened her bra, dropping it to the floor. Her breasts shifted, reacting instantly to the brush of the fabric. He didn't look away this time. Neither do I. I want to forget you. I want to forget for a while, Jack. Can you help me do that? Well, you have no idea how much I'd like to try. He hadn't bothered to take off his clothes before lying on top of the bed, and she came to him, reaching for his belt and unbuckling it. I'll not read the next few lines because of the children and the super religious. Then she pulled away, whispering softly against his cheek, "Make me forget, Jack. Please make me forget." As he drew her nearer and removed her T-shirt, she began to moan deeply and loudly, loudly and deeply. In the midst of their heat, such a state of abandon was reached that the normally voyeuristic Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs, who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. I think I'll go to skip the next paragraph. Page 253, Abuse of Power. Her cries became veritable screams as she moaned, and her eyes became glassy with passion. As Jack continued to bring Sarah to an increasingly greater state of tension and release, her screaming became threatening. He tried to quiet her by putting his hand over her mouth while continuing, blah, blah, blah. Quiet, quiet, he tried to command hoarsely. Faisal will hear you. He reached for her. I'll have to continue later. He reached for her T-shirt.
Savage.
Come softly, darling. Come softly, darling. Come softly, darling.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The scandals are overwhelming. They're awesome. They don't stop. And as an independent, hardline conservative myself, borders, language, culture is my motto, you would think that people would assume that people like us have no emotions and no feelings. The way the left presents themselves is that only they have feelings, only they feel passion, only they feel sensuality, only they can understand sex. And a lot of young people think that a conservative means no fun, a conservative means, you know, no excitement. It doesn't mean that at all. I mean, I'm a sexual libertarian by definition. Because I don't care what anyone does, as long as they leave children out, to be frank with you. Within reason, okay? Just keep it out of my face. Don't tell me what you're doing. I'm not that interested. I'm just as interested in your bowel movement as I am in your sexual movements, to be honest with you. I don't really want to hear about it. However, in my novel Abuse of Power, I could not leave out a few sexual interactions between the hero and even his friend Tony, because that's part of their life. If they're macho men, wouldn't they also have a sexual life and a sensual life? Would you expect them to be department store dummies? No. So let me finish it. It's two more paragraphs. So Jack is with this woman late in the book, and they're having, you know, they're really together, okay? And Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. Let me pause there. Have you ever read anything like that in a novel? The answer is no. It's novel. It's original. It's not derivative. Nobody that I know of has ever written a sex scene like this. Ever. Are you ready? I'll finish. Her cries became veritable screams as she moaned and her eyes became glassy with passion. Her screaming eventually became very threatening. Jack tried to quiet her by putting his hand over her mouth while continuing to stroke with his loins and lips. Quiet, quiet, he tried to command hoarsely. Faisal will hear you. He reached for her T-shirt and couldn't believe himself as he pressed it over her mouth, holding it down hard against her lips, by pressing it against the sheets, one hand on each side of her face. Their hips were in perfect synchrony, and she continued, her cries and screams now muffled beneath the shirt, as Jack made love to her as he had never made love before. Sarah bucked and arched and was in a world he could never see. Then it was over, and they collapsed onto the bed, sweating, chest heaving. Sarah rolled toward him and snaked a hand across his chest as she nuzzled his neck. Thank you, she murmured. You don't know how long I've been wanting to do that. She smiled, kissed his neck. It couldn't have been that long. We barely know each other. And I'll stop right there. Because my point is quite simple, which is this. Women only on the Savage Nation. Women only. Did you find this scene upsetting? Did you find it abusive, offensive? Should it not have been read on radio? Did you find the sex scene from Abuse of Power grating? Did you think it was inappropriate for me to read it on the air? After all, I am not a liberal. Now, from a liberal, you'd expect a sex scene, but of course it would be written by somebody with the inability to describe lovemaking. They would have to revert to the gutter. They'd have to use F words and dirty words and be like a dirty little boy, which is what you would expect from those on the other side of the aisle with a pen in hand, so to speak. But anyway, women only. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Or do you want me to do politics? I mean, I can only do so much. You have the dirtiest administration in American history. The only reason you don't know it is because they own the media. That's all. End of story. It's a complete sentence. Two sentences. This is the dirtiest and most corrupt administration in American history. Sentence two. But the media won't show it to you. Sentence three. Let's talk about anything else. Sentence four. New York. Tommy, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Great to talk to you. I work down at the World Trade Center site. I'm a construction worker who does not support what goes on down there. And I see every day some of the vilest things ever you can imagine that's not reported in the mainstream media. A girl holding up a sign that said, Ronald Reagan blanked, blanked. I can't even say it. It's disgusting. I don't know how.
Yeah, no. These are some of the worst people on the planet.
I walk through, I see this little boy, a kid, flick his cigarette at a woman TV producer that was doing an interview of another person and wanted him out of the camera shot. And he said, no, I live here. You move. And flicked the cigarette on this woman. And I see.
And it didn't make it onto CNN, though, right? Wolf Blitzer wouldn't cover that?
CNN's there. The girl from CNN, I see her once in a while going around with her blonde, bubble-headed, bleach blonde, you know, and just... That doesn't get on CNN.
No, they're only showing you the young people that Nancy Pelosi wants you to see. Did you see any of the Hitler's banker signs, that Jews own Wall Street signs?
Yes, I have. I saw one sign one day that said, Whitey is the cause of all this. The next day I went back, that sign was not there. So whoever's running the show there, they said, we better get that sign out of here.
Yeah. Well, the Soros minions, his seed money started it all, according to what we found today. Tommy, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. It's the only thing I have to give anybody is my book, okay? Albany, New York. John, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Mike, I just bought Abuse of Power, but I've been a longtime listener, so I bought five other books leading up to that because I'm fascinated on your development here, starting with Earth Medicine and Herbs and then Liberal.
Oh, my God. You bought a book I wrote in 1972, Earth Medicine.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You know, I was writing books about the environment before Al Gore was a glint in his father's eye, I think.
I know, and it's interesting. I wanted to know which order I should read in, but I couldn't get through the other night.
Well, I wouldn't say that Earth Medicine leads to abuse of power, but it's an interesting theory.
what order would you read them in?
I would read my novel first because it's more exciting, and then I would read Trickle Up Poverty because it tells you exactly who is responsible for the meltdown on Wall Street and how they're getting away with it by obfuscating in order to make certain that Obama's not called out for who he is, which is, frankly, in my opinion, a front man for the people who busted the economy in 08.
Fascinating. Okay.
All right. I'll send you another copy of Abuse of Power, though, for being a good caller. No women callers. You see that? I said women only. Did you find the scene upsetting? Not. I have 30 women callers. Out of the 8 million listeners I have 30, 35 women. You'd think one of them would have listened and called. I'm joking. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation from Sacramento, California. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you've just sent your book to the top of the bestseller list, I'm sure, with you reading from it. That was a great scene. I would have never thought that was in your book.
Well, did you find it offensive?
Not at all. No,
I shouldn't say why, but the answer is because it's not offensive to write about lovemaking if it's done with dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've tried to call you so many times to get through and tell you how important you are to me, and I've been a listener for a long time. And
Are you a young lady who grew up listening to me with your parents, or are you older than that?
No, I started listening to you after 9/11 when I never turned my radio off. That's when I discovered you. And ever since I heard you then, every day I listen.
So you started listening when you were 75 years old. Now you're 85, huh?
No, I'm only 45.
I don't know how I do it. Each day is getting harder. I swear to you, Tony, the scandals from Holder and Obama are so frightening. And when I see their mouthpieces go on the cable channels, I want to start breaking things. I see that the guys like Neil Cavuto don't have the horsepower to challenge them. He sits there. I mean, he's a nice enough guy, but he's basically a stooge. And it's frightening to see them get away with their double talk and lies. I mean, they don't even say, how come the Solyndra CEO paid no taxes? How come the guys, you know, it's one after the other. It's unbelievable. How do they let him get away with it?
I don't know. How does
How come Fox News hasn't been screaming at the Democrat shills saying, wait a minute, Warren Buffett says the rich should pay more taxes, yet he may owe $1 billion in back taxes. It just came out. How in the world does your boss let him get away with that? Why don't they say that to them?
I don't know, but you've got to hang in there for us. You've got to keep coming on every day.
Well, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power in a plain brown wrapper so nobody in your apartment complex. 1-800-449. Liz in Pittsburgh, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I actually think that sex scene is kind of hot because, you know, girls, they, you know, they're a tease. And so that man seems kind of like forceful. And I think that's pretty much what women want in the bedroom.
Is to fall on a radiator. Well, he falls on the radiator. Have you ever read of any scene like this in a book? I didn't copy this from anybody. It shows you how vital my imagination is. Is that Jack falls off the bed onto the hot radiator. I mean, I thought that was pretty good, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to read it. I think it's pretty interesting how he takes the, you know, the T-shirt and kind of muffles it. It's kind of almost, you know, it's edgy. It's definitely edgy.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you got that. It is very edgy, and it's something that you would never expect from a guy like me. Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely not from you.
You see, now this is the stereotype I'm trying to overcome, and that is that conservatives don't understand sensuality, conservatives don't understand sexuality, conservatives don't understand passion. That's nonsense, but that's how the libs sell themselves to the children. The children by nature want to have fun. They want freedom, and they figure that the quickest road to freedom is to become a liberal, that if they become a so-called conservative and love their country, they're not going to have any pleasure or fun. And we've got to change that, Liz. It's one of the reasons I wrote a novel. You know what I'm saying?
They have been pumping sex. I'm 33. They've been pumping us full of sex since I've been, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. That's all you see is sex everywhere. So why can't we be, you know, a little sexual too if we're conservative? You know, I don't have rainbows on my car. And I'm not telling everybody what I do in the bedroom, but, you know, I like a good, you know, hot story to read too.
Well, it's going to be sent to you if you stay on the air. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. You don't even have to buy it. Look, incidentally, guys, I got to tell you again. The book, my publisher emailed me yesterday, is the fourth week on the New York Times bestseller list. It's doing extremely well for a first novel. Actually, it's doing very well even for a tenth novel. I beat some of the big names in the thriller category with your help. Because remember, it's not been on any other outlet. So thank you very much for that. But look, I'm not telling you to go buy the book because I need the money. I'm telling you to buy the book for A, it's a heck of a read, B, it is a political novel, and C, it sends a strong message to publishing and to Hollywood that, yes, we're conservatives, yes, we love America, and yes, we buy books, and yes, we go to movies. And having said that, take a look at the celebrities, so-called, the low-life celebrities who've joined the communists in the gutter. You take a phony like Alec Baldwin, one of the worst people on the planet. Here is a man who does TV ads for a bank saying that he's in favor of the Occupy Wall Street vermin. How does he get away with this? Answer, because they own the media. Now, I got to tell you something. I am boycotted by certain advertisers because they say I'm too extreme. What is extreme about me? I love America? Well, then I'm an extremist. What is extreme about me? I want illegal aliens stopped from swarming over the border? Well, then I'm an extremist. What, I believe in English only as the language for America, not ballots in 10 languages? Then I'm an extremist. I mean, what are you talking about? And yet you have rap people, drug addicts, degenerates, advertising banks, and they're considered kosher by the people who run the ad business? No, something's wrong with that picture. I have been subjected to this double standard for too long to not tell you about it. And I just told you about it, and I'm sick of it. And it's only going to change when you change. You've got to change your buying habits. You've got to support advertisers like those who advertise on this show. And you've got to start boycotting products that are advertised by double talkers like Alec Baldwin. How can he advertise a bank and then go in the street with the gutter rats and say, I'm for occupying Wall Street? You should cancel your credit cards if you want to put your money where your mouth is. So, you know, you have the power. You have the power. And you've got to use your power. There are far more of us than there are of them. Okay? Never mind the 99%. You're the 99%. They're the 1% of straight garbage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
Loved this song when I was a kid. Loved it. They could never sell it today. They couldn't. It's too slow. You know? It's like on glue. Sitting on the Belt Parkway, you know what I mean? That's where we used to go. I mean, people, what do you think? I didn't grow up real. I mean, I grew up in a real city. I went out with girls. So I'm not supposed to know things. The scene about falling on the radio, truthfully, have you read anything as good as that in the history of sexual scenes in books? Never. Never. I mean, you've read the other stuff. You'd expect it. Notice there was not one F word. Have you ever heard about a man putting a T-shirt over a woman because she was screaming too loudly and he was afraid that people would hear her? No. And he wasn't the killer. I mean, think about it. There's a lot of nuance in this book, but it's the same in the whole, like, all the politics, the political stuff in it. Let me read you a violence scene, okay, since many of you say, well, I'd rather hear about sex than violence. How would you rather hear a violence scene, those of you who are offended by sex? You like that? Jack awoke to the sound of screaming, a woman's scream of pain, the kind of pain that comes from teeth being extracted without Novocaine, or fingers being cut off with wire clippers. Her high-pitched wails echoed mournfully down a long hallway. Then they stopped abruptly, followed by the sound of her sobs as she gasped for air. Jack had a bag over his head, burlap from the smell of it, and he had no idea where he was. He was sitting in a chair with a sagging wicker seat, his wrist tied to the slats that comprised the seat back. The chair was not bolted to the floor, but even if he could hop it around, where would he go? His mouth tasted of blood, and his tongue was sore, which meant he'd managed to bite it during the struggle in the alleyway. Worse yet, his head was throbbing, and the room seemed to be spinning slowly. Around and around like a Ferris wheel, he thought he might throw up, but at least he was alive for now. Listening to the woman's sob, and he knew she wasn't acting this time, a turn of events that surprised him. And then I go on to what had happened to him. And here it is. As he considered what he would do next, a metal door clanged down the hallway, opening, hitting a wall, then closing. Whoever had thrown it open wasn't happy. Voices drifted toward him as two pairs of footsteps reverberated against the walls moving in his direction. He wrestled with his bonds again, trying to loosen them, the rope cutting into his flesh, rubbing his wrists raw. There was nothing in the Krav Maga training manual to deal with this, except for the rubber-encased, bite-activated potassium cyanide pill that Mossad operatives carried between cheek and jaw like chewing tobacco, which he didn't have. Then a door in front of him clanged open and a voice said, "Your girlfriend is a stubborn little tart, Mr. Hatfield. I've seen men twice her size break under half the stress." Jack would know that smarmy voice anywhere. It was blank, blank. I won't read you any more. Again, I want to show you, you know, from the alpha to the omega, from the subtle to the not so subtle, from the violent to the sexual. It's all in there. And I want you to read the novel. I want you to understand this is my story in some way. I had to try to tell you my story. It's as though I'm a man who threw out a message in a bottle to the world. And that message is about how I have been wronged by the illegitimate governments of the United States and Britain. And the reason I say the United States is because they won't do jack to help me as an American citizen clear my name and clear my honor. I worked my whole life in an honorable manner on behalf of this nation. And I am the only member of the American media to be banned from entering Britain on trumped-up charges created by people within this country who I think were funded by George Soros's Media Matters. I believe there are other names I could name right now, which I'm not going to bother with. And they use the English to do their dirty work, hoping it would bring about the death of conservative talk radio in America. I was the canary in the mine shaft, and I had little or no help from anybody else in the media, conservative or otherwise. And this has gone on since 2009. It's cost me a lot of money, a lot of agony, and I had to write a novel to try to reach out to the world. And when you read this book, you'll see what it's all about. Jack tries to save America from the next 9/11. And in doing so, he finds out that he was smeared in a very similar manner to yours truly. Some of it's fiction, some of it's not fiction, some of it's imaginary, some of it's real. The fact of the matter is, though, it's a book that was written like a message in a bottle that I threw out in the ocean. And I hope that this bottle washes up on your shore and you pop the cork and you read the message. In the next hour, I'll move on to some horrible news, because it's all bad under Obama. This country is collapsing around us under the most corrupt administration in history.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
But they say, some say that he and Castro were oppressive to political protesters, to political prisoners, and killed some of them.
Oh, without a doubt. Okay. You know, you can't, I mean, you don't make omelets without breaking eggs, you know. When the situation is so oppressive in a country as it was in Cuba, where the ordinary people are suffering bitterly and have no possibility of raising themselves, eventually you get to a desperation situation, I mean, as you did in Vietnam.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother.
It is the Savage Nation. You're watching the unfolding and the unmasking of the naked Marxist in the White House, who is pulling the strings on these protests funded by George Soros. If you doubt me, go to michaelsavage.com. We have the evidence. You heard the protester use a line right out of the Soviet Revolution. You don't make an omelet without breaking eggs, Karl Marx. In other words, if you have to kill thousands or tens of thousands or millions of the bourgeoisie in order to make the perfect society, as was done in the Soviet Union, as was done by Mao Zedong, then go ahead and do it. And guess who they're going to kill? You, you idiot. And you're going to listen to Nancy Pelosi? Nancy Pelosi, who says it's organic and they're young people and that this is democracy? This is not democracy. This is fascism in the streets of America. When the heck are you going to wake up to what's going on right in front of your eyes? We have a naked Marxist presidency. And that's why, instead of eating my heart out, reading this to you and telling you the truth every day, day in and day out till I can't take it anymore, Warren Buffett, I knew he was a faker. I didn't go for his aw shucks, middle of the road act. I knew it. Comes out today, he may owe $1 billion in back taxes. He's President Obama's pet billionaire, and he calls for shared sacrifice. He says that the super rich shouldn't be coddling. It turns out he himself, Berkshire Hathaway, his company, has been fighting the IRS tooth and nail to avoid paying its federal tax bill for nearly 10 years. Did you believe this hypocrite? Did you ever buy Warren Buffett's double talk and that nice guy act? I never did. I never did. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And you can't fool me ever. That was said by Abraham Savage. And that's why I went to reading a few, one sex scene from Abuse of Power, which did not have one F word in it, not one offensive word in it, and yet it was pretty hot. How do I do it? How do I do it without being graphic? How come I don't mention body parts, I don't say anything dirty, but it just shows you what education can do for you. Now, compare that with the vermin with the gold chains and the gold teeth, with the things hanging down from their neck, who are saying they're in solidarity with the communists in the gutter. They have to revert to it because they don't have the language. They know 50 words of English. They only know 50 words of English. Most of them begin with F or B. That's all. F or B. And you can make it into a noun, an adverb, an adjective. If that's your education level, you can make the F word into anything you want if that's all you speak. If you speak gutter, you act gutter. If you act gutter, you speak gutter. If you sing gutter, you act gutter. And then, of course, if you have illiterates in the media, they think that that's art and music. Not to me, it isn't. I don't listen to that filth. And yet one of them is up there with the gutter rats in solidarity with them. How is it that Alec Baldwin, one of the biggest hypocrites in America, can go to this march and be on television ads for a bank card at the same time and not have you rip up your bank card? Are you that stupid? Why don't you cut up your bank card and say, send it to Alec Baldwin? Why don't you show them that you're a conservative or you're an independent and that you vote and you buy things and you're not buying anything that that mouthpiece pushes? I've been subject to protests. And I've been subject to boycotts ever since I went on the radio. The oligarchs who run this business have tried to destroy me over and over again. I'm still here. So I asked you, if you're a woman who heard me read those scenes, were you offended, yes or no? Tanita in Mississippi, were you offended by the sex scene in Abuse of Power?
Absolutely not. I felt like it was erotic. And it's that intimate bonding between a man and a woman that those are those private moments that you share and the little things like that that you can take with you and think about next week and things you can't share with anybody else. And absolutely not. That's what you're supposed to do between a man and a woman. And also,
Tanita, you're from Mississippi, so women down there see things differently than the Harridans of New York City. The girls, for example, from Sex and the City would probably not even understand passion. All they know is sex. They don't even understand passion.
That's probably correct.
I'm very serious in what I just said. The more they talk about sex, the less they know about actual connection and a passion. They only know about, let us say, almost pornographic interchanges between people. You take a look at the Sex and the City mentality. That's basically pornography is all it is. Would you consider my scene pornographic? I wouldn't.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no. No, and that's an interesting factor. What makes something pornographic and what makes something tantalizing and alluring and sexual without being pornographic? That's a very important question.
I wanted to say touch on your previous caller, the woman. I know you always speak about how men are turning into milk toast and it's just soft. And it seems like you have one variation of two different variations of men these days, and it's either the ruffians, or they're turning into women, and so stuff like that.
But is that the same in the South, Tanita, in your world?
Well, yeah, sure.
What do you mean? Either they're the muscled, tattooed guys who are brutish, and or the guys who are kind of acting like pocketbook carriers?
Exactly. Why aren't there just regular men anymore?
Well, I can't speak for Mississippi, but I don't really know what you're facing down there. I thought that in the South you still had a variety of the male of the species, Tanita. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. We'll leave it at that. No, I'm getting the women calling. I love it. I love the women calling the show because the guys aren't buying the book. Men don't read novels. Men really, yeah, it's women who, I don't know, who's buying it? I really don't know. Honestly don't know. It's an interesting question unto itself. How come if you open up your paper, you're not reading that Google has evaded taxes and is being investigated by the IRS? How come you're not reading that one of the greatest supporters of Obama, the Google boys, is being probed by the IRS? Pardon me, my mind was on the novel and the scene, so I couldn't even say the word probed. But the IRS is auditing how Google Inc. avoided federal income taxes by shifting profit onto offshore subsidiaries, according to a person with knowledge of the matter. It's a huge story. And they've cut their worldwide tax bill by about $1 billion a year. Now, look, this is interesting. Here you have another group that's super liberal, and their Google website only directs readers, when you hit a search, to liberal-oriented products or organizations. And yet here they are, allegedly cutting its worldwide tax bill by about $1 billion a year using a pair of strategies called the Double Irish and the Dutch Sandwich, which move profits through units in Ireland, the Netherlands, and Bermuda. And Google reported an effective tax rate of 18.8% in the second quarter, which is half the average combined U.S. and state rates of 39%. Now, whether or not they'll actually pay another dime is another story. The French tax authority is also probing the gonoffs of Google. That's said in a fun way. The Google gonoffs. Well, let's call them the Google gonoffs. Let's call them the Google gonoffs. I mean, you don't get a 767 and park it in Mountain View, California at a space hangar for free unless you're smart, unless you know Nancy Pelosi. I mean, these are Nancy Pelosi's values. How in the world do they park their 767, a private jet, which they say is a business jet, at the Mountain View facility of a NASA station, the NASA Ames station, and pay virtually nothing? How did they get the right to do that? Why was that never investigated? Answer. Do I have to give you the answer? Google's taxes have also drawn government scrutiny from the SEC. Yeah, it'll come to nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know, with a little money spread around amongst the Democrats of the Bay Area, you know what'll come of it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Sacramento Judy, KSTE Country, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I thought your sex scene was ooh la la. But, it was totally acceptable.
Good.
Nothing wrong with it.
Judy, can I ask a question? Are you a married woman?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to marry you to Abusive Power. I'm sending you a free copy. I'm sending you the book. It's a good book. It's not just that. I mean, come on. It's a book. That's all. I'm going to ask another strange question. Is there anyone listening to this show who has... Remember when Jack takes a T-shirt and puts it over the woman's mouth because she's screaming and he's afraid that someone will hear them down the hall? Has anyone ever experienced anything like that without getting too graphic? And for the French women listening to this show, did you find the sex scene between Jack and the unknown character too mild from your societal point of view? I'll be right back.
Hold me fast, the magic spell you cast.
It is the Savage this Nation. I'm not yet Dr. Unsavage this evening. I haven't yet unwound my usual evening cocktail or beer. Can't drink anymore. I don't like drinking. Get a headache now with even a beer. You know what it is? It's coenzyme Q. It's almost like antabuse. You take any CoQ in high dosage, you've noticed you can't drink? Okay, turn her off. I don't really like, was that Edith P.F.? When I was 17, I thought she was something. The dugout in Manhattan with the dust, with the sawdust on the floor and the big deal. The things people have to do to meet people, my God, but at least you could meet somebody. They would talk to you. I don't know how men meet girls anymore. The idiot's texting. How do you meet somebody if the idiot's looking into an oracle in her hand? She thinks it's the Holy Grail that she's got in her hand. She's got nobody on the line but another girl looking for a guy that they're texting. And they're making believe that they're meeting somebody. That's the game. How does a guy break through that? It's unbelievable. I don't know how a guy could be young anymore today. No wonder they're taking the cloth. and going into the monastery. There is no monasteries to go to either. How about politics? You want to do politics? I don't know. I can't. The corruption, the tax evasion of those telling us to pay more taxes is so frighteningly ugly. Google tax probe to focus on offshore units. Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Solyndra funder Kaiser paid zero taxes for years. I'm not making these stories up. They're real. Please read them if you're interested. If you have the time, go to michaelsavage.com. I'm not going to read you the stories. Just understand that everybody who called for higher taxes on the rich are tax evaders, every one of them, with special favors from you-know-who. Matthew in Albany, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Matthew?
Thank you for that nice welcome, Michael. My question's a two-part question. It's with regards to the Wall Street protests, and I hope you'll forgive my ignorance, but I've heard you coin the phrase red diaper doper baby. Here's the first part of the question. What is a red diaper doper baby? And in my mind, these people in New York qualify for that. Are they that?
Yes, yes, yes. Very good, very good, very good. I haven't used it for a number of years because I got tired of it, but it's actually a perfect phrase. It's quite descriptive of the vermin in the gutters today. Red diaper doper baby. Now, the phrase red diaper baby is not mine. That is something that originated before my time. In New York, mainly in New York, amongst communist parents, members of the ILGWU and things like that, mainly people in the needle trades, mainly emigres from Europe, Eastern Europe, they produced children who were, they were communists, and they bred the children in communist ideology, even many of them even sending their children to communist camps in the Pocono Mountains, where the beauties of communism were drummed into the little child's head. So these were red diaper babies, and they were a product of the 1950s mainly. Now, in the 60s, there came along the devil, Allen Ginsberg. He was the devil incarnate, posing as a poet. And Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, the drug pusher, and others popularized the use of marijuana or dope, popularized the use of LSD. And so that's where the dope part of it came in, red diaper doper baby. So you had children who were raised to be communists, who then became drug addicts on top of it all. And that metastasized the illness of communism, blinded them to the realities of the murder of millions of people by Stalin, by Mao Zedong, tens of thousands killed by Fidel Castro, 3 million killed by Pol Pot. That's because of the drugs. So in other words, although they were communists as youth, they became blinded to the damage that communism actually did in the last century, and they are the red diaper dopa babies of today. Does that explain it? Is that a clear answer?
That.
And what's question two?
Well, that was it, but their parents are kind of responsible for that then.
Well, I wouldn't even call them parents. Their parents are like dogs who have children. Most of the parents were like dogs. They didn't raise their children. They had their children. There's a big difference between having children and raising children. But most communist parents are like dogs. They have children. They don't raise them. They let them go out and do what they want, whatever feels natural. If it feels good, do it. Don't impede their development. You could see them in restaurants today, can't you?
No.
No, I'm saying when you go out and you eat, don't you see some parents letting their children do anything they want?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not right because that...
That's right. I'm sending you a free copy of AOP. Marilyn, Silvana, you're on the Savage Nation, Silvana. What's on your mind?
Yes, my husband and I listened to the excerpt as we were in the car driving down from D.C. to Southern Maryland where we lived. And, you know, we got happy and excited listening to it. It's our 10-year-old son was in the back seat, and he listened to it, too. And it was lovely writing where you show a lot of emotion and a lot of humanity because, you know, the books that are out nowadays are the biography of Snooki or the biography of Paris Hilton, and it just shows a lot of emotion to listen to something like this. And, you know, because I know that you watch sometimes reality TV, like The Real
Silvana, House. Stay on the air. You're a very good caller, and I know you're trying to... Thank you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Michael Savage Show. Notice I changed it from the Savage Nation because we're talking about lovemaking. From the Savage Nation to the Michael Savage Show. I mean, how much can you talk about corruption? We're living in a banana republic brought about by Obama and Eric Holder, in my estimation. They're getting away with it because of their friends in the media who are all communists or communist sympathizers, some of whom don't even know it. They don't even understand that George Soros funded a communist group from Vancouver, which calls for worldwide socialism in order to bring about this Attack Wall Street game. It is rife with Jew hatred and anti-Semitism. You're not hearing or seeing any of that because they don't want you to understand the subtext. So I'm reading from my novel, Abuse of Power, not to sell you books, but I don't know what else to do. If I continue to talk only about the tax evaders who are getting away with murder, who tell you that you're not paying enough taxes, Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes, according to Human Events, being Solyndra funder Kaiser paid zero taxes for years. You don't want to understand what's going on here, or shall I say you understand too well and you're bored of it because it's frightening you. So that's why I read from it. Let's go back to that nice lady from Maryland in a car with her husband and 10-year-old. Silvana, welcome back to the program. So you're riding along and you heard the scene, the sex scene, and you were not offended by it, I assume?
No, I was not offended, and my husband was sitting right next to me. We were listening to it, and at this age, I'm 45, he's 48. We're just looked at as, you know, very boring suburban soccer parents with our son in the back seat. So to hear an excerpt like that on the radio on the Savage Nation is something that is unexpected. But we listened to it, and our son also kind of raised his eyebrows in the back, and We expose him to different things. So it wasn't really a risque type of excerpt.
No, because there were no F words in it. There was no anatomical descriptions that are vulgar, as you would expect in a scene of sexuality or sensuality. But yet, this is part of life, is it not?
Yes, it is part of life. And it kind of got us talking to the fact that we kind of forgot about that part of our life somewhat. Sometimes we do tend to forget about that part
of
our life.
Look, I'm going to do a show one day when it's all settled down about what happens to marriages when children come along, because it's a very important topic that almost nobody will dare talk about. Your life changes for the better and for the worse, and there's no question that there's a penalty and a price to be paid for raising children. And there's no question about it that people don't even want to admit it or talk about it. But there is a reality of it. I mean, a person's romantic life changes when there's a third person in the room, even if that person is 10 pounds. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And this kind of raw, human, emotional romance that you wrote is such a change, complete change from the...
But that raw human emotion is how it all begins, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's how every marriage begins, with that powerful sexuality between people. That's usually what brings people together and bonds them together.
Exactly.
But nobody should expect that to go on for a very long period of time. And if they do expect that, they're not going to have a marriage.
Right.
Okay. And I think that's all we need to say at this time. In other words, it's not the norm for this to maintain itself for a very long period of time. And that's something that without any, chuckles or humor that we need to discuss in any great detail, because the human bond between man and woman is made for pleasure in one part, but it's also made primarily to create a family. And the problem today is that with the materialism and the focus upon the carnal, we have forgotten that the essence of humanity is not about the carnal or about materialism. It's about the spirit and the soul. And the object is to create family. And family is the brick of civilization. The Marxists understand that. Karl Marx wrote about that. Karl Marx said that the family must be dissolved. This is why the media continuously harps upon the carnal and the materialistic between man and woman, which is specifically to break down the family, to make the family less important. The bourgeois family is the enemy of Marxism. Have you noticed that Obama has not ever said one sentence about the sacred nature of the family? Have you noticed that?
He hasn't gone to church either.
That's not important to the red diaper doper babies. He goes to the basketball court. That's what's important. Silvana, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power, which you can enjoy with your husband in your private moments. So now for the guys out there who don't like this lovemaking stuff, I'm going to read you about Jack's and Jack and his buddies when they get even with some of the bad guys. Okay, it's one page. Are you enjoying this or not? Raise your hands. I wish it was a live audience I could see. If it was a live audience, I could say, do you want me to read this or go back to politics? You know, and I hear you scream, politics! Cut out that girly stuff. We're not interested in lovemaking. We get that on the internet porn. Well, no, it's not internet porn. That was the whole point. It was to show you something beautiful between a man and a woman. Sexual, passionate, exciting, scintillating, and yet not dirty, okay? This is the problem with internet pornography. It's dirty. It's just filth, unbelievable filth. It appeals to the lowest level of the sexual arc is the dirty, the lowest level. The highest level is the connection between people on a more spiritual level through the body. But again, I don't want to go into, you know, Reverend Mike here. I mean, if it was a church, it would be a whole sermon on sexuality. I'm an expert on everything. So now let's turn to violence, since liberals hate violence and love sex. I'm now going to turn to violence to make the liberals turn the show off, since they don't call the program anyway. They just see if they can catch me saying something that they can send on to their boss, Mao Tse-Tung Soros. Page 304, Abuse of Power. So a team shows up on the boat. They had turned the salon and pilot house of the Sea Rider into a makeshift command center, reminding Jack of the apartment house in Paris. The Sea Rider itself was anchored in the middle of the bay, away from prying eyes and ears, and who knew what else. If they were going to make some kind of move, it had to be done with the greatest of stealth. Three of Tony's buddies were here, the same three who had helped them assault the island. Jack had met them over the months in various bars that he and Tony frequented around San Francisco, old hardened war vets who still remembered what it meant to fight for your country. Back in the days when the bad guys were easier to spot, and you knew who your friends were by the uniform they wore. Now those uniforms have been replaced by street clothes, and you never knew who might be hiding behind a simple T-shirt and a pair of jeans. And thanks to fascists like Lawrence Soren and the people he bankrolled, there was no way to know when a look of concern or surprise was genuine or merely a facade designed to manipulate and deceive. But like Tony himself, his buddies were old school, the kind of guys you could rely on in a pinch. There was Mike Abernathy, a steely-eyed 65-year-old former Army Combat Commando badass who looked as limber as a kid out of high school. Mike had done four tours in Vietnam, earned a chest full of medals, and at one time was even on the short list for Medal of Honor. Then there was Jonah Goldman, a 50-year-old former Navy SEAL whose search and rescue missions around the globe were legendary, a guy who looked like a young Arnold Schwarzenegger. And finally, Doc Mattson, a former medic and paratrooper who had trained Tony himself. Grizzled, white-haired Doc was the oldest of the bunch and possibly the toughest, and the others sometimes kidded that he'd fought alongside Ulysses S. Grant. It was a motley crew, all right, but these men were as tough as they came and had the mental and physical prowess to best any 20-year-old coming out of the box. But the biggest surprise here was David Karras, Max's old flame and computer hacker extraordinaire. After that night in his apartment, Jack feared he'd never see the guy again, especially in the same zip code as Max herself. Yet here he was, with a shave and a haircut, commandeering three laptop computers that projected their images onto Jack's 60-inch television screen. Jack shot Max a quizzical look, and she just shrugged and said, "What can I tell you? I'm a sucker for men who grovel." Okay, so then Karras hits a button on the laptops, and the television screen comes to life on the boat with a building blueprint, the California Palace of the Legion of Honor. The Legion of Honor was a revered part of San Francisco's history, a common destination for tourists and locals alike. Built in, anyway, you know, I don't want to go into it. It's a beautiful museum, which I love very much, and I've gone to many events. There are several events, so I wrote it into the book. Can you believe? See, a lot of this is part of the life that's written in. That's why it reads so well. Some of it is invented, and some of it is, you know, fictional, obviously. But this story that I write about the Legion of Honor in one of the scenes is based upon a dinner I actually went to there, a black tie dinner, that I fictionalized in the book. Can I tell you an inside story of that? I may as well tell it to you, because it's a side story for those of you at this point who had the book has some momentum. I wrote the Legion of Honor in because I love the museum. I've gone there since I first moved to San Francisco. I go there particularly to see the Rodin pieces. I mean, I'm a student and a fan of great sculpture. Okay, so I go there once in a while, and I feel like I come out of a cathedral when I look at great art. San Francisco does not. San Francisco, let's put it this way, has a paucity of great art, but the pieces that it does have are great. And one of the greatest exhibits we have is in this museum of Rodin sculptures, okay? So they're there. They're beautiful. They're amazing. The word beautiful doesn't apply. So anyway, I go to I gave some money to the museum last year, and they invited me to the dinner, and I went with a table of 10. And the liberals who run the museum tried to insult us by putting us at the worst table at the dinner. They make believe you go to a wedding and you have relatives you want to shun. That's what they did to us. I didn't really care because these people I invited were my friends and associates, and I had a good time anyway, despite what they tried to do to us. The second dinner I went to, even though I gave them some money, they gave us an even worse table next to the musicians and the music in the back, right, the way they set up. And I had invited a U.S. congressman to the dinner, and they really insulted me by doing that. And I told them that I will never, ever give them another dime. Then, to add insult to injury, and I'm going to be very blunt with you now, the chief fundraiser, the guy who runs it all, has a wife who had come up to me at one point when I told her I had a novel coming out in a few months that I may want to have a book party here at the museum. She went on and on about how they often rent the museum to people for book parties and how they just had one of the people from Pacific Heights who wrote a book, a travel book. She didn't quite get it. I doubt that she reads, being in the fundraising business. And sure, we'd love to do it. So when I actually tried to get a book party at the museum, they closed the doors on us. They said, oh, they don't really do it. They wouldn't do it. I got mad, and I decided to get even. I said, you're never getting another dime from me. And I stick to my word. They're never getting another dime from me. But this is to show you what it's like living in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So there's no talk of Google or of the funders for Solyndra not paying taxes in any of the newspapers, including the New York Post. You have to go to other sources for it. As far as the Iran plot and the Saudis, I don't know whether it's true or false. Incidentally, I think it's war talk and war drums, personally, by Obama, in order to... Look, his ratings are in the garbage. What does a president do? He's like all other politicians. They go to war. That's all. Expect a war. That'll be your October surprise. Iran is a certifiably crazy nation under the Hitler, don't get me wrong. But as far as the accountability for the alleged plot to assassinate U.S. ambassador and the Saudis and this and that, I don't know. To me, it looks like war drums in order to throw people off from Obama's failures and the fact that his poll numbers are low. Nothing like a good war to save a presidency. He wouldn't be the first. I mean, all the advisors know that. They're not dumb. I mean, look what it did for Bush. And look what it did for, God, every president. Look, every time Reagan attacked the enemy, his ratings went up. It's Bill Clinton, bomber jacket. I mean, there's nothing like crushing a Christian in the morning to raise the poll numbers of a liberal, right? Look what he did to Serbia. The illegitimate war over Serbia that he got away with, killing thousands of people, blowing up every bridge on the Danube River in order to make sure the Serbs couldn't hold on to Kosovo, which was Serbian territory since the 1300s. I mean, how can you get away with that? Answer, you own the world media. You can get away with anything. That's all. All right, let's go to the callers. Binghamton, New York. Fred, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Sex within the confines of marriage is, yes, beautiful because it is according to God's plan, but Mr. Imaginary Jack Hatfield and his inside that plan. So, in other words,
well, okay, but they are single. They're not cheating on anybody. Number one, Jack is divorced, and the woman he's with is not married. Does that matter?
No.
All right, then I will not send you a copy of Abuse of Power, Fred. Thanks for calling. Jennifer in Alabama, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I just want to let you know I was considering. I thought it was fascinating and riveting and wonderful and not degrading at all.
Good. And what age group are you in?
I am 30.
Oh, watch out, Alabama. Here comes Jennifer. Jennifer, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. Stay on the line. Margaret, Minnesota, you're next up. Was the scene offensive?
No, not at all. In fact, your eloquent use of adjectives is what reveals your intelligence. I think that's the difference. It's the adjectives. In both the violence and the sexual scenes that are, it's like it's more palatable when it's not just in your face. It's kind of like the difference of lingerie versus just blatant nakedness.
And you're Margaret, good. Margaret, what do you do for a living?
I'm a custom picture framer, small business owner, grandmother, and I go to church every Sunday.
And you're not offended. God bless you. You're getting a free copy of Abuse of Power. Lisa, Mississippi, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
How are you?
Good.
I was surprised. I was surprised, and I was glad my granddaughter wasn't in there. But I thought that it was really very tastefully done.
Thank you. You're getting a free copy then because you weren't offended. Alabama, Mary, your opinion, please. Go ahead.
I just wanted to let you know how impressed I was with the strength of Jack's character that was revealed in the words of the lovemaking scene. It was very exciting, and it actually caused me to blush.
And what age group are you in, Mary?
I am 45.
Interesting. Are you married, currently married?
Yes, sir, I am. My 11-year-old daughter was in the vehicle with me, and I think that was part of the blushing reason. It was very exciting to me.
Well, here's the thing. When do you permit children to hear that there is passion permitted between men and women? At what age are they supposed to learn it? And would you rather that they get the pictures from pornographic imagery? Of course not. On the internet or from, you know, from friends who don't really understand that there's more to it than just the cartoon version?
Well, my daughter's grown up. I mean, we live on a farm, so she's very aware of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. In other words, if your kid grows up with animals, they understand what happens.
Yes, sir. Very much so.
You know, that's a very intriguing statement you just made, how people on farms are presented as kind of bumpkins and geeks who don't know anything, while red diaper dopa baby children who supposedly know everything really know nothing. And so when it comes time for the boy, the red diaper dopa baby boy, to be with a girl, often they can't be a boy. They have to be like a girl because they don't know how to be a boy. It's very that's an intriguing answer to the question, that the more disconnected people have come from the land and from animal husbandry, the more sexual dysfunction there is in society, Mary. I've never thought about it. I'm sure someone's written about it sociologically. Stay in the line and sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. No, I mean, I love thinking, you know what I'm saying? These are just ideas I'm throwing out there. Savage says people have to go to farms to learn how to make love. I didn't say that. Why don't you take it out of context now and send it to George Soros, the Mao Zedong of our time, if you're in Media Matters. Savage says sex with animals is necessary for children. I didn't say that, but you're going to twist my words again like you did with the English thing. See if you can ban me somewhere. This is how the evil perverts twist my words. I know what they can do with that, but I pay no attention to them. Somehow I'm still there, and I'll outlive all of them. How do you like that? My goal is to outlive every one of my enemies. My goal is to outlive everybody in radio who hates me. Everybody in the media who hates me is to see them all disappear and me still be here. I want to be 95 years old and still have a radio show. How's that? That would be my goal. Can you imagine how ornery I'll be at 95 on the radio? I'm nowhere near that. But what fun that would be. You know? Anyway, look, it's serious stuff going on out there. Very serious. See the link between who funded the street vermin that are in the gutters, and it all leads back. The Wall Street protests were funded by Soros, according to an article we found from Reuters. You must read it. See how Google evades taxes. See that Warren Buffett may own $1 billion in back taxes. See that the Solyndra funder, Kaiser, paid zero taxes for years. It's all on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, here are the headlines. They're astonishing. They're astonishing, and the more you look, the worse it gets for Obama and the liars like, for example, Warren Buffett. That's Obama's favorite billionaire. He's not quite ready to practice what he preaches. According to a new article, Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes that he has not yet paid. But it doesn't end there. It only begins there. How about Google? Worshippers of Obama, friends of Obama, fundraisers for Obama, donors to Obama. Google is being investigated by the IRS on how they avoided federal income taxes by shifting profit into offshore subsidiaries. According to a person with knowledge of the matter, this came out today. It's a huge story. They transfer rights overseas and they avoid taxes in a certain trick called the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich. Google is the owner of the world's most popular search engine, and they've cut their worldwide tax bill by about $1 billion each year using a pair of strategies called the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich. They move profits through units in Ireland, the Netherlands, and Bermuda. Google reported an effective tax rate of 18.8% in the second quarter, less than half the average combined U.S. and state statutory rate of 39.2%. How's that? Now you understand how the liberals get their money? Read all about it on michaelsavage.com. Here's another one. Remember the solar company that went bankrupt? The fundraiser, Kaiser, paid zero taxes for years. Zero taxes. He's a billionaire from Oklahoma. Zero taxes. Mr. Solar. Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Right? What else? Well, 11 socialists arrested in San Francisco Wall Street protest. Hitler's bankers say young people attacking Wall Street. Nancy Pelosi says they're organically assembling and the young people blame the Jews. That's the message of some of the Wall Street protesters. I warned you, but you didn't believe me. What else is in the news? Underwear bomber says, I wouldn't be guilty under Sharia law. I intended to wreck a U.S. aircraft for the U.S. Wreckage of Muslim lands, says the underwear bomber. So would you like Sharia law? Because if you would, you're going to have your throat cut and your airplanes blown up. Speak to a nice liberal lawyer from NYU. See if you can rush in Sharia law. Solar companies received $4.75 billion in the last day of the program. One of the firms that got $1.2 billion was plagued by financial woes, the most corrupt administration in the history of the world. How about the scandal of guns to Mexico? 2,000 firearms to Mexican gun smugglers? No one's in jail. Now, if you gave guns to criminals in your neighborhood, you'd go to jail pronto, wouldn't you? Occupy speaker calls for violent revolution. You didn't see that on CNN. Pelosi's disclosure belated in husband's land deal. Read all about it. Savage Nation is the number two talk show on the internet. Can you believe this? Savage reads from Abuse of Power. If you'd like to hear me reading from it, you can go to michaelsavage.com. Are celebrities supporting Occupy Wall Street heroes or hypocrites? What do you think I think? Obama, you know, the Christians are being killed in Egypt, as I warned you would happen. Churches are being burned to the ground. And guess what Obama said? He responded to the massacre of Christians by saying the Christians should show restraint. If that's not enough for you, here's more. Well, I don't think I can give you any more because I don't think you can take any more. How much can you take from an administration like this? Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Google has avoided $1 billion a year in taxes. Solyndra funder Kaiser paid zero taxes for years. Solar energy lobby calls for extending Obama's stimulus grants for solar power. Biofuel fraud case puts industry under scrutiny.
I think this organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
The Jews control Wall Street.
This is healthy.
No revolution.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent.
Bourgeoisie won't go without violent means.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
Wall Street Jews.
We understand their frustration.
No, my friend.
We applaud their activism.
No revolution.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
These are the Jews. The Jews control Wall Street.
It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
Going with socialism!
Yeah!
Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Tampa, Florida. Debbie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about the elderly with STDs. A few months back, I went to a bar in Naples, and there were like 80-year-old men that were trying to pick up like 50, 60-year-old women. There were women that had on spandex without bras walking around. It was the most disgusting thing.
What do you mean? It was like a senior pickup bar in Naples, Florida?
I swear to Michael, it was absolutely bizarre. It was like
I know that as a result of the Viagra type of drug, men are sexually active until they drop dead now.
Exactly.
And so, but the women generally lose interest in sex after a certain age. Where are they getting it for the drive from? Do you think?
I have no idea. All I know is that there were 80-year-old men that were coming up to me, and I'm in my 50s. I look nice. I'm very, very married. But it was disgusting. There was a woman there. She had a shirt on with no bra. I mean, a woman after, 50 really needs a bra. Really needs a bra.
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I agree with you, though.
It was terrible, and I thought to myself, these people, I mean, have they not learned about AIDS? Have they not read the paper?
I think a guy at 80 figures, even if he gets a disease, he'll probably outlive the disease.
Maybe that's the comment.
I mean, between hair transplants and tooth implants and Viagra, what's to stop a guy today?
Savage.
People over 30 can't multitask. They can't multi-hear. They grew up doing one thing at a time. The younger generation can do multiple things at a time, but all wrong. They're able to multitask, but they do everything wrong. They can't write a letter correctly. They can't type correctly. Nothing. I never saw anything like it. People do everything wrong, no matter what you ask people to do today. They can't get anything right, particularly if they're under 50. They can't work. They don't want to work right. I was raised in a time when the work ethic was king. I mean, you had to work. You had to work, and you had to do a good job. It was an honor. It was a mark of a person's self-respect, dignity, manhood, to be a worker and a good one. That's how I was raised. It was drummed into me from early childhood. And then you wake up and you see children. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. I mean, pay them. You can't find an American kid, a white kid, to do any kind of work. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. They won't babysit. They won't walk a dog. They're a bunch of spoiled drug addicts. An entire generation of children raised to think that the world owes them a living, and they walk around with a snotty attitude that I don't know where it comes from. I got to be harsh about this. I watch, I largely live in the suburbs. I stay in the city part-time, and I move around through many locations for obvious reasons. But a lot of my time is spent in the safe white suburbs, so to speak. I mean, let's call it like what it is. No matter how liberal they say they are, they don't want anyone around them who doesn't look like them, even though they vote lib. That's the way they are. And you watch them in their child raising, and sometimes you have to shake your head, whether it be a young mother who probably is on a prescription drug herself, and all she's obsessed with is her abs. Feeding her child a jelly donut and a cocoa in the morning on her way to school, along with his Ritalin tablet, knowing nothing about diet and a child's behavior, nothing. And she doesn't want to know about it. All she wants to know is to get the brat into school so she can go have the affair or go to the exercise class for 4 hours. Whether it is a pair of white parents who are a little older than I was when I had my first child, taking a brat to a restaurant, 8, 8:30, 9, I shake my head. When do they stay home with them?
When do they stay home? Don't they do homework? Isn't there a safe time to go to a restaurant where you don't have to listen to? And the crayons. Fine dining around a kid with a crayon or a coloring book? I can't even digest when they pull out the Crayolas. Why are they in the restaurant with the child with Crayolas educating him? And they always do with the show how smart they are and the child is. Last night I went to a place. It was downscale Italian. I figured I could escape it, but no, it got worse. There was a father at an adjacent table. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I had to take the food home. I had to leave. Now, he wasn't a bad guy. Don't get me wrong. But I had to listen to an entire lesson. As the children are eating, he says to them, during the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 1960s, who was president? I'm not making this up. And the children have to repeat to the father, who was the attorney on the U.S. Supreme Court? And I'm trying to eat. I couldn't even get a piece of bread down my gullet. So as I said, I packed it up and left. What is this lesson at a dinner? Why do I have to hear it to understand you're a smart, liberal man and you're intelligent and your children are as bright as you and they're going to learn to screw everyone around them when they grow up like you do for a living with your law degree? That's what you're telling me? That they're not going to be like the ordinary person, they're going to learn how to screw everybody just like daddy? Why do I have to hear this? Is there no hour when there are no children? Now, look, I love children. I raise children. But at a certain point, it seems to me it's child abuse to have them in a restaurant. So I say to myself, don't they do homework anymore? I know they don't babysit. I know they don't wash a car or a boat for a buck. They don't do chores. Do they do homework? No, unless the homework is how to put a condom on a cucumber or how to learn how racist white people are or to learn that marijuana is healthy for you and tobacco. Tobacco is bad for you. Marijuana is healthy for you. So is there no time of day? When I raised my children, if we went into a restaurant and the kids started to make any kind of noise, I immediately picked them up and I went out of the restaurant. I talked to them. I said, look, there were other people. And even if they didn't understand me, I said to them, you can't make noise in the restaurant. There are other people eating and they want to have a nice dinner. So please, if we go back, you can't make noise. You can't make one of your famous cocktails out of the salt and the pepper and the ketchup and the mustard and the soy sauce and mix it and pass it around. No, you can't make that famous cocktail that you two like to pass around with each other because I'm liable to puke on the table. That's in the Chinese restaurants. They used to make a cocktail. Do you have any idea that that's the reason the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer? It was because of times like this. When you have a situation like we have today, that's why the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer. You know how the story goes, don't you? Well, I may as well tell it's as interesting as any. Having studied this for years, all of this stuff. Our theories, no one knows. I mean, the ancient Sumerians look like my uncles to me. I mean, I see the pictures, renderings of them. I guess I descend from Sumerians because they all look like my relatives. But the way the story goes is somebody ate some grain, some type of wheat dish or whatever in the area there, the Mediterranean basin. And they spat it out. I know it's disgusting. They didn't eat it all. It's like, ugh, this is disgusting. Again, another night of grain? I'm sick of grain. I don't care how healthy they are. I don't want it. I'm a pew. Ah! And they spit in the plate, but they were starving. Days later, they went back, and there was nothing to eat but the grain that they half masticated and discarded in the plate. And the guy ate it. Ugh, disgusting. I ate this guy. And guess what? His wife didn't look like she had a mustache for the first time in 25 years. His ugly little children looked like he could deal with them without wanting to throw them out of the cave door. In other words, he got drunk. Why? Because the half-masticated grain matter that he spat up fermented in the cave during that period that it was sitting there, and it was produced some alcohol. And that's apparently one of the theories as to how alcoholic beverages, better known as adult beverages, developed in history. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm glad I could share this moment with you. Another moment in Savage history on the Savage Nation. It's actually probably, according to what I've read, true. And by the way, guess which culture? You're not going to believe this one. This is a real, you're talking about historical ironies. Take a guess which ancient peoples first developed wine from the grape. Buzz, answer. The same country that's now dominated by the invader from Turkey, Iran.
I've been very clear that I have
I have complete confidence in Attorney General Holder in how he handles his office. He's indicated that he was not aware of what was happening in Fast and Furious. Certainly I was not. He's assigned an inspector general to look into how exactly this happened. And I have complete confidence in him, and I've got a complete confidence in the process to figure out who, in fact, was responsible for that decision and how it got made.
We are living through the most corrupt administration in American history. You're in the midst of it. The most corrupt administration in American history. The solar company, Solyndra, received $500 and some odd million from Obama through the so-called stimulus funds, which we told you was nothing but a piggy bank for donors to Obama. The FBI raided the firm last week because they went bankrupt after getting the money. But they're not the only firm to get stimulus money and go bankrupt. Four other companies received a piece of the $800 billion stimulus from Nancy Pelosi, like Solyndra, only to later file for bankruptcy. How come they're not in handcuffs? Why aren't the politicians who forced the stimulus down our throat taken out in handcuffs and indicted? Tell me why. Why are they going after the CEOs of the company? Why not go after the corrupt, rotten politicians who told us that these funds would be used honestly to promote jobs? Put them in handcuffs. Won't happen. It will not happen. It won't happen. So you say, why am I unhappy? I'm miserable. I feel like I'm going to explode with rage at what they're getting away with. I've never seen anything like it.
Savage.
We've talked many times on this program about the threat that Sharia law poses to civilized people. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to discuss the threat of Sharia law is Bill Murray, the chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition. William Murray, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, great to be on the program with you today.
Well, could you explain to the Savage Nation what this means, Sharia law? What does it mean?
Well, Sharia law is the body of law that controls all of Islam, all the way from the family all the way up to whatever government they have. And this is what folks don't understand. In the Western culture, we are used to a government inside the home, and then a government inside of the church, a government, a secular government that is separate from all of those, and then, of course, God's government in heaven. Islam views that as all one thing, all under one law. So Sharia law controls inside of the home. It is the law of the land. It is the law of the mosque. And allegedly, it is the law that is practiced by Allah in heaven.
Is it really a threat in America? I mean, how serious is the threat of Sharia law becoming real?
Well, the threat exists because Sharia has no difference in its ideology between the church and the state. They see it as one solid unit. I think we have seen this with the Taliban. We see it in Saudi Arabia, where the religious police beat women in the streets for a little bit of hair showing. And it is a serious concern. And as it moves into the West, we see that application. There was an instance in the United Kingdom, for example, where the moment that Muslims took over a township, they established Sharia law and found a 350-year-old church to be a nuisance and ordered it closed because they don't have the view of tolerance that we do. And this is a major problem.
You've spent time in the Middle East. What kind of damage is so-called Sharia law doing there?
We can just see what just happened in Egypt. Michael, we have people lying in the street dying. We have half the Christian population of Iraq has been expelled as individuals try to march forward with radical Islam. The situation in Egypt and Pakistan are almost intolerable. Countries that we give billions of dollars to and we furnish weapons to, the tanks that we gave Egypt were used to crush Christians the other day. We have the same situation in Pakistan. There's a woman there about to be stoned to death simply for the fact that someone accused her of blaspheming Muhammad. This is Sharia in the Middle East, but it's worse than that. This is Sharia in the UK. In London today, there are 70 areas within the city that are no-go areas for the police, where signs are put up that say Sharia law enforced here, you better stay out. This is a big concern. And it all goes back to something inside of Islam itself, although it doesn't look bad here, that sort of explains the reason behind that expansionism and the reason behind that enforcement of Sharia law.
Give us some examples of Muslim law being put into effect in democracies.
Well, we need not look further than the UK, where they do have Sharia courts now, and we have situations in the United States already. We had the problem with a New Jersey judge where a man had nearly beaten his wife to death, and the defense attorney said, "Well, this is okay because he lives under Sharia law," and this idiot judge in New Jersey agreed and let the man walk free. He said, "Yeah, he's a Muslim, it's Sharia law, it's okay to beat your wife under Sharia." Fortunately, we have the prosecutor in that case appealed it, and it was overturned. But we can't have this, and it is something that is marching forward all over the European front, and we don't need it here. And by the way, I want to go back and explain something that may be a difficult concept for people to understand. Polygamy is the driving force behind this. It is the reason that so much of Islam is being exported out of the Middle East. If you take a country with Saudi Arabia, Muslim men are allowed to have up to four wives. So you have 10% of the men with 40% of the wives. You have another 10% that can afford two or three wives. You have 50% of the male population of Saudi Arabia that cannot have a wife ever. This is also true in many other Muslim nations. This makes it necessary, and it's one of the drivers behind jihad. It's a testosterone driver behind jihad. When you have millions of men, when you have a third, a quarter, a half of your population that can never be with a woman, they're going to have to seek those women elsewhere. You just don't see thousands of Muslim women getting off airplanes to immigrate into France and immigrate into England. That isn't what is happening, and you really don't have that. Now, we have peace here, mostly among the Muslim community, because in the United States we have enforced monogamy. And this means that most of the Muslim men in the United States wind up being married. But that isn't the case in most of the Islamic world. And the polygamy is a driver. And I know that's difficult to grasp. I know it's hard for people to believe. But polygamy is the driving force behind jihad.
Well, how serious is the threat of Muslim law in the United States?
Sharia law is a problem in the United States because we have a stealth Sharia that is occurring. And that is, we get into a situation, example, we can't criticize Muhammad in the United States. That is Sharia law. It is actually Sharia law. You can't criticize Islam. You can't say anything about Muhammad in this country. You can say plenty about Jesus. Try to say something about Muhammad. You can say plenty about Moses. Don't say a thing about Muhammad. We have very honest. A movie producer just came out and said, "Hey, I could never do about Muhammad what I do about Jesus." This is stealth jihad, and it's stealth Sharia, and it is what is making newspapers and others afraid to say anything. They are actually self-enforcing Sharia law upon themselves. We also have the situation of honor killings in this country. And in a lot of places in the world, in civilized places in the world, those individuals that commit honor killings, it isn't being treated as a serious a crime as a murder is in the United States. And we're going to get to the point where, just like that judge in New Jersey, well, this is Islam, it's an Islamic family, and this is what's to be expected. No, we have the rule of law in the United States. We cannot move to Sharia. We cannot accept things that are alien to our Western civilization. And by the way, this is why we're having this conference on November 11th in Nashville, Tennessee. It's called the Constitution versus Sharia Preserving Freedom Conference, and people can learn about it at shariafreeusa.org. And what we are attempting to do there is get the message out, not only what Sharia is, but also how people can combat it in the courts and legislatively in their community.
What can we, the people, do?
Well, we'd really like them to be alert and to pay attention to what is going on in their own communities and to let people know about it. If you see a situation in your community where you believe that some sort of Islamic influence is gathering so much force that individuals are afraid to speak out against what they might be doing, you have a problem. And you know, register and come to this convention is a good example. If you can't, do your best to learn about what Sharia is. We have a good website. Others have good websites as well. Go in and look for those on the Internet in particular that teach about what Sharia is in reality, not what those people would have us believe, oh, it's just another thing like Judaism or Christianity. It isn't, because it demands total submission. And by the way, that's what the word Islam means, submission. It demands total submission at all levels of life and government. And we can't have that here. Maybe it's okay for a preacher to get up and say what he thinks the government should do. It's another thing for an imam to get up and say what the government must do.
William Murray, thank you for joining us today on The Savage Nation. Things are getting much worse under Obama, aren't they?
Michael, it was great to be on the show, and we look forward to as many people as possible being at our Sharia convention in Nashville on 11-11-11.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Make it on our own. You know, somebody, an outstanding entrepreneur like a Steve Jobs, somewhere along the line, he had a teacher who helped inspire him. All those great internet businesses wouldn't have succeeded unless somebody had invested in the government research that helped to create the internet. We don't succeed on our own.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Chicago, Bruce, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I appreciate your dedication and work, and I just want to ask your opinion when you have sinus congestion, cold, and trying to get over it. Using a neti pot.
You know, you ask the wrong person. These hippie, let's start with this. I mean, I am an expert in herbal medicine. I've written books on homeopathy and such, and I do believe to a certain extent in alternative medicine. So let's frame it that way. However, when it comes to sticking a neti pot with salt water into my nostril and having it run all over my clothing, I mean, there's a limit to how far into the third world healing I am willing to go. If you're interested in using something in your nostrils because of sinus congestion that's a little less dramatic, I would suggest buying a little salt water, you know, the saline sprays in a drugstore.
Yep.
Or, for that matter, you can mix salt water in your own house and sort of inhale it. It'll run down your throat and all over your neck anyway. The neti pot thing is very, very Nelly. It's very Nelly. I'm sorry. You've tried it with the spout in the nostril?
I haven't tried it yet. I was told about it and didn't know if it was going to be anything.
There's something icky about the neti pot that I can't get into. I mean, if I were to use a neti pot on a clogged nostril, it would have to be in a bathtub. It's going to run all over your neck, down on your lip. I mean, you want, like, mucus on your neck? You know, the reason they could use it in India is that they basically don't believe in dry cleaning, number one. And number two, they could do it while they're swimming in the Ganges River. You know, take your neti pot and go have a bath in the Ganges. But it's not made for Westerners who are sitting in a normal environment who basically want to wear a white shirt and tie in the morning, you know. But look, to each his own. Today in America, anything goes, including neti pots, I suppose. Andy in Chicago. Is that Jandy or Andy? My eyes are blurry. Andy, what's on your mind, Andy?
You know, it's a curse when people call you with stuff like that because you're so graphic. I'm just cringing in my car. So,
no, I have a gift with words, but if he's going to ask me about a neti pot, what can I say to him other than there's a certain limit to how much into the third world I'm going to go? I do not want mucus from my nose all over my collar, no.
But it's just horrible the way you describe it. It's like I'm sitting in my car and it's real. Stop yourself. Hey, I want to talk about gardening. First of all, I have two dogs that are diggers. I don't have a lot to I need to plant in a pot. And also, more importantly, I want to know what you're planting this year.
I planted tomatoes, Italian parsley, basil, and I have a bunch of fruit trees. However, almost all my fruit trees are infected with a fungal disease this year, which is common now in the San Francisco Bay Area. They all have a curly leaf disease, which is caused by a countywide fungus. So unfortunately, the trees are being sprayed. We are spraying them with an organic spray, so the fruit will still be useful, but it's pretty horrible to see that.
How about something that maybe you could plant? I have a 9-year-old daughter who wants to plant carrots, and I have two dogs that love to dig.
Our carrots are good, but, you know, I don't know. Do you cook? So Italian parsley is nice to plant. I'm very impressed with the pots that they give you now that come out of nurseries, which have a they're like an earth pot that you can put right in the ground. Have you seen them? They're amazing.
No.
You gently tear the bottom of the pot off. They have the seedlings in them, right? And you gently tease off the bottom of the pot, which is sort of a compost paper type of pot. And then you pull out the tendrils very delicately. You tease them out. You dig a hole. You put the whole pot right in the ground. It's got pre-fertilized. And this is the most amazing thing that they've developed. So it's almost impossible to screw up having something grow. I planted my tomatoes out here in California in very late March. I prefer planting them in early March, but they were not available. You want to get the tomatoes in by early April, the latest on the West Coast. But you're in Chicago, which is just the right time for you, right?
Right. Right now, I mean, we got a little bit of weather and, you know, Mother's Day, so I'm going to put my wife to work planting.
Yeah, but, you know, plants are amazing for children because I remember as a kid, you talk about graphic. I remember in the third, fourth grade, they had us grow lima beans. Kids don't know the first thing about reality. When we sprouted lima beans and I saw a shoot come out of it, I was astounded to understand that inherent in a bean was life itself. In other words, the whole concept of living foods came home to me crystal clear. It's a beautiful thing to teach your children how to plant things.
That's what she learned was when we planted a bean, you know how the bean actually comes up, the shell of the bean comes out of the ground on the plant? That's what
Yes.
actually got her very, very excited about it.
That's right, and it takes the child's mind away from the computer and away from the fantasy on the computer into the reality of the earth. There's really nothing better. I'm 100% for little, even gardens in cities. You could do them in windowsills if you got sunlight and you keep up the water and you can do them there. But I don't want to do a gardening show. I mean, gardening is nice. It's not like my whole life. It's just beautiful. That's something Michelle Obama and I share. Is a love for vegetable gardens. Oh, here we go. Another neti pot call. Just what I need. Okay, if you got disgusted by the last neti pot call, I'd recommend that you put it on mute for a minute. Frankie in Chicago, go ahead, please.
You know, the neti pot thing, my mother says, oh, my boyfriend uses a neti pot. Try it. It works. All it did was irritate my mucous membranes more. Not only did it do that.
Why are so many American men suddenly sticking teapots in their nose?
I have no idea. But
what did the Indians run out of a market for teapots, so they came up with this neti pot concept?
It just doesn't make sense.
I mean, next they'll sell them for, shall I say, ears? They'll call it an ear. You get an earache, stick the neti pot in your ear. They'll work your way down the body.
Yeah, the whole allergy thing. I understand people's problems with allergies, and they're looking for alternatives. But as far as taking salt, basically, it's pouring it into the...
Well, all right, now let's start. Salt water is very therapeutic for irritated sinus cavities, incidentally. It's just a matter of whether or not you want to... apply it using a neti pot or just simply buy a little spray in a drugstore. I mean, I prefer the more, let us say, westernized approach, which is a little bottle of saline solution.
The amount, you know, they tell you to put in there.
Oh, it's horrible. No, it's disgusting till it runs in the back. It's graphically disgusting. This is something that I have to cut off at a certain point. Because once it goes in the back of your throat, you can't ever eat food again. Nothing ever tastes right. Once you let's cut it off right there because I can get even more graphic, and I don't really mean to, just for shock value. You want to talk about peach trees or Osama bin Laden? Sacramento, Terry, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, stop with the pots. Yeah, your peaches have peach leaf curl that has nothing to do with the Bay Area. It's all over California fruit orchards this year because all the rain we had. And the best thing you can do is just keep your trees healthy, put compost or I don't do organic fertilizing to get those leaves growing.
Oh, so in other words, even if we spray them, it's the fruit's shot.
Yeah, well, their fruit's not shot, you got to get your leaves growing again. If you get some fertilizer on them, it'll shoot.
What do you mean? You're saying that they were overwatered from the heavy rains this winter?
No, there's a fungus that's endemic in California. It's there every year, and it's exacerbated by a lot of rainfall. So I'm over in the Fresno County area where there's we have 100,000 acres of peach trees there, and there's guys that have done everything, myself included, and I have peach leaf curl. And what you do is you just grow the tree out of it. But next winter, make sure you put a dormant spray on it, a copper Bordeaux that kills that fungus in the dormant season.
I get it. So what should I do right now? What are you saying? Just keep the tree healthy with fertilizer and let it grow itself out is what you're suggesting.
It's going to drop all those leaves, and what you need to do is just put just light fertilizer every couple of weeks. So if you're doing the organic thing, get fish emulsion or whatever those guys say to use.
I got to go kill fish and grind them into the fish powder. All right, well, good. Thanks for the tip. You're an actual farmer. That's good enough for me. I had prize apricots. I have a small hillside orchard in one of my properties, and it was a prized 25-year-old apricot orchard when I bought it. And I'll tell you, each year it's gotten worse.
Savage.